Thank you, Ryan. My name is Phil N. And I am an alcoholic. My name is Joe. I'm an alcoholic. That's going to fall, I can tell you that. I'm never the first choice. I'm always the booby prize. But anyway, my name's Joe Krogan. I'm an alcoholic. And if you guys would help me, first of all, let me give you guys a clue, because there's a lot of young people in here. Be careful who you ask to read the traditions. Make sure you shouldn't ask anybody with under 2 years to read it, because we can never say anonymity. So you got to qualify when you ask them. Do you know what that word is? Okay, you know, don't do it to them. Anyway, if you would indulge me, I like to take a second moment of silence. And one of my spiritual mentors taught me this, and one of my sponsees actually helped me with this. He told me, if you want God to be real in your life, you got to treat Him like He's real. So I take a moment when I'm up here to just acknowledge the presence of my God. And if you don't have a God, or you have one that you're angry with, or one that you're trying to avoid, I did that for a lot of years. You can borrow mine. He seems to be working pretty well. But I'd like to take a moment of silence, a second moment of silence, if you'd indulge me. And that's what I do with it. What I recommend you do is probably pray for the speaker. Thank you. And thank you for asking me. And it's always a privilege to do anything. I was taught never to say no when Alcoholics Anonymous asked me to do anything. And I want to thank everybody who helped make this possible, prepare all the food. It was a really great event. And I see a lot of young people with a lot of enthusiasm. And I really like that. I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't find it out early, but I found it out the hard way, that if you don't get high on your recovery, you'll get high on something else. So I practiced this program for a lot of years, just doing enough to stay sober. What happened was I found myself at 5.5 years sober, wanting to drink more than I wanted to stay sober, because I was bored. I was just going to meetings. I was showing up. I was trying to get what you guys had and bring it back into my life and become a successful version of Joe. It didn't work that way. I found out this is an all-or-nothing program, and for a guy like me, that's a big deal. Their half measures don't avail us 50%. They avail us nothing. And I'm lucky to have been around people with great sponsorship, been exposed to great men in this program that have walked before me, that have taught me how to do this thing. And that's how we do this thing. So it's an honor to be here. I assume there's a lot of... are there any people in here under their first year in sobriety? If you wouldn't mind putting your hands up. That's great. That's wonderful. God bless you, and we're glad you're here. And hang in. Hang in with the other people that are doing the deal. Those are the guys... By the way, let me tell you, it's gorgeous today, isn't it? Did you know? My ADD kicks in every once in a while. Just bear with me. Follow along as best you can, okay? And if I get lost, I'm going to ask you. There's going to be a quiz. Where was I? But it's a gorgeous day, and the reason I say that is because only the real sick people would be here on a Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Oh, I'm here too. So we're in the right place. But I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It has saved my life. I absolutely love this program. I love the recovery. I love being around alcoholics. I drove, and it's not South Florida. We're actually from North Florida, over by St. Augustine. You know where that is? Okay. I'll show you a map afterwards. My home group is the... actually, I have two. Don't report me to intergroup, please. Okay, you know, I have a men's group that meets. It's not on a schedule, but we meet every Thursday night. It's called The Usual Suspects. And we are, and my bisexual home group, I mean, you know, you know what I mean. My co-ed, right, there you go. My co-ed home group is the Life's a Beach, and we meet on Flagler Beach on Sunday night. So if you're ever in Flagler Beach on Sunday night, Yeah, I call it Son of a Beach, but no, but it's a great group, and that's my posse back there. My beautiful wife, my two kids, and one of my sponsees, and his lovely wife. She lives here, but I saw his face when he walked in the door. They charged him, right? He goes, "I got to pay money to hear my sponsor." But yeah, you do. Okay. Anyway, I am an alcoholic, as described in the Big Book. I'm a real alcoholic. I always used to hear that at meetings. Guys go, "I'm a real alcoholic," and I'm going, "What am I?" You know, and this guy really thinks a lot of himself. And I would wonder, what do they mean, a real alcoholic? Like, what am I, a counterfeit one? But I know what it means now, and it talks about it in the Big Book, because it describes certain types of alcoholics. And I'm going to tell you, the rooms are filled with people that are not alcoholics of my type. Now, I can't, this is a great disease, but you got to self-diagnose it. I can't tell you you're one. I'm going to tell you I'm one, okay? And you got to self-diagnose this for this thing to work. And that's the only way it works. And I didn't know this for the first 5 years. I remember going to meetings with my sponsor. We were at a meeting one time. There was a guy, he picked up his 20-year chip. I saw him get up, and my sponsor was a fanatic, an AA fanatic. Actually, he's originally from over here in St. Pete, and Clarence Snyder, one of the original guys, was his first sponsor. He didn't stay sober, but it was one of his first sponsors. And so we were at a meeting, and this guy picked him. And Frank used to take me to meetings every single night, and I was captive because I didn't have a car or a driver's license, and I was living with Mom, so I would anything to get out of the house. And Frank would take me to these meetings, and finally I saw this guy pick up his 20-year chip, and he said this in a meeting, and we hear these things in meetings. He said, "I have never worked those steps. I don't have a sponsor, and I don't sponsor anybody, but I've stayed sober coming to meetings for the last 20 years, and I only go to one meeting a week, this meeting right here, it's my home group." And I looked at my sponsor, and I said, "I want his program. How come that one doesn't work for me?" And I can't tell you what kind of recovery you need. I can only tell you what kind of recovery I need. See, I tried his program. I tried doing just enough to stay sober. And I'm going to tell you what happened to me. I got bored. I would come to the meetings and I'd say, "I know what Ryan's going to say. He's a blowhard anyway." Nothing personal, Ryan. No, just kidding. This guy's going, "I do it. He knows Ryan." No, I'm just kidding. Or they would say, "You know what, and Paul's going to always say the same thing," and they're saying, "There's no parking spaces over there," and you know, and that's what happened to me. I started drifting away, and other things, I started slipping stuff in between God and me. I started slipping a wife, a business, priorities. My priorities started to get in between, and I kept saying, "God, I'll get right back to you. I promise, I'll get right back to you." And I didn't get back to him. I found out that the more you do in this program, the more you want to do. The less you do, the less you want to do. It's contagious. That's why I love the enthusiasm of this group. And, you know, you got to keep your foot on the floor. You got to keep the pedal to the metal, I find, for me. Or I will lose that enthusiasm. I'll lose that excitement about Alcoholics Anonymous, about my recovery. I have great men that our home group is an incredible group of men that sponsor each other. And I have the fellowship that I seek today. And it's incredible. So, but my story is a lot like pretty much everybody else's. This should take no longer than 2 hours. So I'm going to be real brief. Oh, there it is over there, yeah. Remind me, I never look at the clock. That'll be the last time I look at it, by the way. So start doing this. What happened is, I'm going to tell you what it's like. This is what it's like. I got this little voice inside of me. I call it my narrator. He's narrating everything I do. The problem is he talks in my voice, and I think it's me. And here's what it's like. If I keep doing this program of recovery, I don't hear him. It's kind of off in the background. It's called background noise. Background noise is what it is. And I'll tell you how background noise works. Watch what happens when I stop talking. Hear that noise? It gets louder. The same thing happens with my narrator. That voice gets louder in my head. I start believing him. Ever since I can remember, I used to wake up in the morning with a sense, a feeling of emptiness, a sense of lack. I call it a terminal. We have a terminal sense of lack. And that's what I have. Things would be just be better if I didn't have this family, if I didn't live in this house, if I didn't have that report card, if I had that girlfriend, if I had that job, if I lived in Tampa, things would just, it was always just, I was always 10 bucks short, you know, of where I needed to be, financially, emotionally, and I tried some things to rectify that, to make me feel better than I felt. See, when all the activity stops, that background noise is there, that sense of lack, that emptiness, it just reappears automatically. You give me 4 minutes alone and I'm looking for mischief. I need something to get into, you know. On the way, I could be coming from a meeting, and I remember coming from an 8 o'clock meeting at night one night, and I was new in recovery, probably was about 8 months sober, and it was a tremendous meeting, and I had heard some really profound things. I said, man, that's awesome. That I just feel so good after that meeting. I was like walking on about 6 inches off the ground. Now, I'm driving home, and I stopped at a red light. I got stopped at a red light. Before the light turned green, 30 seconds, this wave of self-pity comes over me. And the next thing you know, because the light's red, so I've got a little quiet space there, and the narrator goes, ah, what the heck's the use? You're never going to get out of debt. Those felonies, you're going to jail. You're never going to get a real girlfriend anymore. You're a loser. And you know, all these things start coming back to me. See, I had, and my whole life has been trying to find something that made me feel better now. Self-gratification, now. I need something to feel better now. And I found that early on, one of my tools, and I found the definition to a word the other night that I had heard before, I didn't know. One of my sponsees said it. A sociopath. A sociopath. Does anybody know what that is? It's a guy who believes his own lies. That's me. I fell for my lies every day. I fell for them all the time. And I, you know, when I look back at my life, that was it. I was always telling myself these lies. And it didn't matter if you told me the truth or not. I had this whole deal going on. The narrator would tell me these lies, and I would buy into it, and I would end up doing these things. So lying was my first coping skill. I remember early on lying, you know, I was one of those guys that was always doing things I shouldn't be doing. And I would say, I'm not going to do it, but I would do it anyway. Kind of like drinking. And I was telling you about a real alcoholic. And a real alcoholic is a guy who's lost the power of choice. When I start to take a drink, I can't control the amount I drink. Our book gives you a two-question test. It's on page 44. Take the test. You still fail even if you only get one of the questions right. You fail. It says, if when you start, you can't. It says, or when you quit, will you find you can't quit entirely? See, I always miss that word entirely. I quit. I'm done. And I always thought I was done. But I never was. It would be either hours, days, weeks. I don't care what time limit you put in after it. Sooner or later, I would think, this time is going to be different. What the heck? I'm going to just have two drinks. Or I'm going to do a little of this, or a little of that, or whatever it is I was doing. Because I'm lucky, and I did a lot of things. I tell my sponsor, I always kid my sponsor, I go, hey, did you ever smoke crack? And he'd say, no. I said, too bad, it's too late. I had a lot of adventures, but this is what the alcohol, I found this is that so I'm going to talk about alcoholism, and that's what my problem is. I found I couldn't quit entirely. And what that looked like is, let me just tell you, has anybody ever got drunk accidentally? Today I'm not getting drunk. I swear to God, no matter what happens, I got to get up early, I got to show up for work, or I'm only going to stop and have two drinks, I got to be home, I cannot be late for this appointment. No matter what happens, I can't be late. And all of a sudden I would go and I would say, you know, I'm only going to have two drinks. And the next thing you know, I was off to the races. And this is what my drinking looked like. My drinking looked like that on a daily basis. And then I would go to the time limit. Well, all right, I'm going to stay here till 9. 9 o'clock, I'll still get plenty of sleep. I can get home and be up in the morning, show up for work. I cannot screw up, no matter what happens. 9 o'clock would roll around. You say, you know what? If I get home by 11, I'm still going to get 8 hours sleep. I'll be okay. You know, or I'll get 7 hours sleep. I can still be... And then 11 o'clock would roll around, and you'd say, you know what? Heck, I'll stay, you know, if I leave by 2, 5 hours sleep is plenty. I'm in good shape. I'll get 5 hours sleep, shower, and clean up and get to work. 2 o'clock would roll around, they'd be throwing you out of the bar, and you go, you know, I'm going to stop at the after hours club, one drink, all I need is 2 hours sleep, you know, that's it, I'll take it. And then the next thing you know, you're rolling out of the after hours club at 6 o'clock in the morning, you go, all I need is a quick shower. Take a quick shower, I'll show up for work, I've done it before, doesn't matter. And then on my way to work, I would say, I just need a couple beers to calm down a little bit. You know, I'm starting to feel the buzz is going away. I'd say, I'm going to stop at the 7-Eleven, get myself 2 nice tall beers. You know, and we got to guzzle them. If you don't guzzle them, you don't get off on them, right? We're not sipping anymore. I'm into it for the effect. You know, so I'm going to drink these beers as fast as I can. I'm one of these guys who used to prepare to go out drinking. No meal. I'm fasting. I want to get off on this, right? Right? I want to enjoy that buzz. So I would stop at the 7-Eleven. I get those 2 drinks. And then here's what I would say. I would go, who the heck needs that crummy job anyway? You know, I'm going to go, I know that bar's open over there. I'm going to go shoot some pool, go hang out over there with the guys. And the next thing you know, I would be off to the vicious circle again. And that's what our book describes as the phenomenon of craving. I used to think, what a terrible term. We use that term, it sounds awful, doesn't it? It sounds like some alcoholic underneath a bridge shivering going, I need a drink. Now, it is that, but it's also what I just described to you. And I didn't know that. I had to have somebody point that out to me. I had to own that. I had to self-diagnose that condition in me. The other condition I told you about was when we quit, we can't quit entirely. Let me tell you what that looked like in my life. What that looked like, and it's a lot of young people in here, but I know there's people that can relate to this. You ever remember the feeling after a binge when you crack your eyelids open? Remember that one? The first thing you do is you crack your eyelids open. Some of us will even be able to relate to this. And the first thing I would say is, oh crap, I'm not dead. Anybody know what that feels like? I do. I used to be mad I wasn't dead. And then the next thing you would do is you would go, that's it. I'm done. And you would wake up and everything's gone. Remember that? There's no more money. There's no more people. There's no more booze. There's no more drugs. There's nothing left but the alcoholic humiliation and suffering. That's what the book talks about. And only alcoholics feel that. Normal people go, whoo, that was bad last night. I'm not doing that again. And they don't. We do. See, I would get up and I would go, that's it. I'm not doing that. I swear to God, I'm not doing that. I'd lost a job again, or my girlfriend's mad, or my wife's mad. I've let down my kids. I spent the rent money. Whatever it is I've done, I've always done something stupid. And I get up and I say, that's it. I'm done. I'm not doing this again, and I mean it. I swear to God, I'd look in the mirror. I'd cry real tears at the end of my drinking, and I meant it. I am not doing this again. I'm going to be a father. I'm going to be a good husband. And I meant it. And I would even muster some change, go down to the store and get a newspaper. Today I'm going to get a job. I'm going to get a real job. I'm going to get the lights turned back on or whatever it was I was doing. I'm going to get some food in here. I'm going to pay the bills. I'm going to just, all I want to do is just be normal. Anybody ever said that? I couldn't be normal. I was trapped in a life I couldn't get out of. And I would say, that's it. I'd get the newspaper. I'd go through the newspaper that day. And then all of a sudden, that emptiness, that little, you know, it's like alcoholics of my type are like a pressure cooker. You put the top on, the pressure starts building. And I don't know how long it takes, but the pressure would start building. And the end of my drinking, it didn't take very long. I mean, not very long at all. I'd start looking through that newspaper and I'd go, ah, heck, all the good jobs are taken. You know, I'm going to have one drink just to calm my nerves. or I'm going to smoke this or snort this or do something, and I'll feel, tomorrow I'll get up real early and I'm going to go get that job. I'd say that. And I would fall for my own crap. That's what a sociopath is. I would believe my own lie one more time. And what would happen is I'd take that one drink, and then here's what the narrator would say. He would go, oh, things aren't that bad. What were you so worried about? And I'm okay. See, alcohol worked for me. Alcohol took away that empty feeling. It took away that terminal sense of lack that I always had in my gut. It relieved the pressure. It made everything okay. It was an entire psychic change. It took a world that was absolutely in total chaos and devastation, and it made it okay. Now, at the end of my drinking, it didn't make it okay for long. You know, we had about 8 minutes. And then after that, you were just chasing it. Couldn't get enough in me. Couldn't get it in me fast enough to take away that feeling anymore. And that's kind of my history of drinking. Like I said, the alcohol seemed to make me fit in my skin, seemed to work for me when nothing else seemed to work. And early on, it was fun, man. I loved drinking and I loved partying. I moved to Miami when I was 18 years old, and it was like a cowboy town, you know. Everything was like, you know, it was a frontier town. Everything was partying, and it was great, and I had a ball. But what happened was is about 10 years just kind of zoomed by. 10, 12 years just zoomed by, and all of a sudden I met some guys that I had known when I first got there, and they had real jobs, and they had, they had cars, and they had wives and kids and families, and I'm still living with orange crates, you know, and those milk crates, you know, those for furniture, and those spools that they put in construction sites. You know, those are my furniture in my place, and I got a mattress on the floor somewhere. And that's because I'm working a job where I'm just making enough money to go party. I'm still that 18-year-old kid. I never would grow up. I didn't want to grow up. See, alcohol was my... And it took me a long time to realize this. And this may sound like alcoholic heresy, but alcohol and drugs are not my problem. They are not my problem. Sobering up is my problem. I hated sobering up. That's like saying if you jump off a building, the fall is not what kills you. It's the ground. Well, it is the truth. And I had to find some way to get high in recovery, and I could never find that. I never believed it existed. The only thing that ever got me high, the only thing that ever made me able to be with you guys, to be with other humans, is alcohol and drugs. And that's the only thing I was ever able to take that would make me seem to fit in, to take away all that sense of lack that I described. So I love the alcohol and drugs, and unfortunately what happened is time caught up with me. And I drank through my 20s, but that was the fun period. And then the bad period starts, because it's not working as good anymore. And you can't make enough money to support it anymore because you want to party. Now you're not just partying on Friday night or Friday and Saturday. Now I had a bad reputation in my 30s. They would call me No Show Joe because I could never work on Mondays. I don't know why. Mondays was a bad day for me. The weekend just wasn't long enough. I would start on Thursday, but by Monday I'd still be going. So I never could show up for work on Monday. And I kind of partied all the way through there. And things got pretty bad in my life. The alcohol and drugs started to catch up with me a little bit. And I was always trying to start over. You know, it's going to be different this time. You know, I was always turning over a new leaf. That's it. I'm done. I'm going to turn over a new leaf. I'm going to start over again. Anybody ever done that? I'm going to move there. I'm going to get this new job. That's it. I'm done with it. And I would do it for a while. I'd be a 30-day wonder someplace. I would go get a job, and the next thing you know, I'm running the place in 30 days, and 30 days later, I'm fired. You know, it was the story of my life. I remember I started a business in Miami. I was 22 years old. I started a business, a plant and tree brokerage, and I was making more money I ever dreamed of. Dropped out of college and was just buying and selling plants and trees, and I had a pocket full of money. I remember driving a brand new convertible, 1972 it was. I had a brand new Buick convertible, and I'm going to get to this men's shop, and I'm getting all these clothes, and they got to be tailored. This is how fast things happen in my life. So I tried all these clothes, and they're going to fix them, and I'm going to come back and pick them up next week. Next week, I was backpacking cross-country. It was my hobo period. I had to leave Miami in total disgrace. Things happen very fast in my life. I wonder if those clothes are still there. They're probably out of style by now, but... So things, and that's kind of what my life went like. And when I turned 30, I wanted to start a new, turn over a new leaf. It's going to be different this time. I mean it this time. I'm going to grow up. I got a job. I opened up a bar on South Beach. And this is when South Beach was just happening. And the place was called Joey's on the Ocean. I thought, man, this was great. Now I'm going to, it was a disco. Back in my disco period. This was my Don Johnson period, my Miami Vice period. I opened up this disco. It's open till 11. It opens at 11 at night until 6 in the morning. But I also had a tiki bar that was on the ocean that was behind it that would open at like 9 in the morning till 9 at night. So being the owner, I got to be there. And I remember that really kind of catapulted my drinking. By the end of that year, organs were starting to shut down in my body. And I was drinking so much. And I drank that bar away just like anything else. I did everything. It was great for a while. It was real successful for a while. I drank that away. But all it really did was catapult my drinking. And what happened after that is I started, it was harder to get it back together. I couldn't seem to bounce on my feet as high anymore. I would always bounce back. And remember I told you about a sociopath believes their own lies? Well, it was getting harder and harder to believe those lies. What happened was, I was living in a motel room. I drank that bar away. And things were getting pretty bad at that point. I was doing some other substances to try and keep me from drinking as much. To try and control and enjoy my drinking. Because I thought the drinking was killing me. So maybe I'll just try a little social crack smoking. It'll keep me out of the bars, right? That experiment didn't go well. What really happened, though, was I got to a point where I said, that's it. And I meant it. I'm going to quit. And at this point in my life, it was really becoming a problem. And I didn't like who I was becoming. And I didn't like what my life was becoming. So I made a decision to quit. And I would have quit, I think. Except my grandmother died and left me this big inheritance. And now you can't quit while you got money in your pocket. You know, us alcoholics, we got one more binge. I just want to go on that last binge, get it out of my system. You know that one, right? That one where you just really, let's go and get it out of our system. Because the last one was good, but I missed it by that much. You know, it wasn't quite there. This one, I really need to go. I'm going to go and have a ball. Well, this last binge lasted about 5 months until the money was gone. And it was in a substantial amount of money. And but some bad things happened on that binge. One of the bad things that happened was I met a girl, and she was a lot like me. You know, kind of water seeks her its own level. And we started partying and doing things together, and our life really spiraled out of control. And it got real, real bad. And what happened was she got pregnant. Now, what I'm going to tell you it's not something I'm proud of, but it's not something, it's what happened to me. I've done what I can do about it in my amends. And she got pregnant, and at this point in my life, I thought a stand-up guy was a guy that paid for an abortion. My principles weren't exactly what they are now. And that's what I thought a stand-up guy was. Well, I'll give her money for her to go have an abortion. And I did, but I forgot she was just like me. She took the money and partied on it. And didn't get an abortion. And didn't happen to tell me until a few months later. And now I'm going to be a dad. And we're just about out of money. And things got real bad then. You'll appreciate this. I said, all right, it's Miami. We got to get out of Miami. This place is crazy. Let's go. We'll start a brand new life. I got just enough money to maybe go get an apartment. And I'll get a real job now. I'm 35 years old. I'll get a real job. See, I took my retirement up front. I'll get a real job now. And I said, we got to get out of Miami. Let's go someplace that's nothing like this. So we moved to West Palm Beach. seemed like a good idea at the time. Now I got to find a job, right? I'm going to be a dad, so I need a real job. I get the newspaper and I'm going to look for a job. What does a guy do, 35 years old, who's never worked a real job in his life? I find a job in the paper. It says, no experience necessary. I said, perfect, I'm qualified. That's the job for me. I go down and apply for the job. Back in the mid-80s, most of you don't remember, I'm sure Paul remembers. No. But what they would do is make you take a polygraph, because they had a feeling you might be on drugs. So they would make you take a polygraph and a urine test, and then they would run your credit. And they sent me for all these things, and I come back to work the next day, and they're going to do a polygraph test, and the manager's got the results, right, of all the things. And he's looking at the results. He said, oh, my God. He goes, you lie. You do drugs. He goes, and you owe everybody in the world money. He goes, you're perfect. When can you start? And I started selling cars that day. True story, too. And when he said that to me, I thought, oh, I found a position I'm really suited for. Your past will be your greatest asset, right? It came true. The promises were already coming true in my life. Well, anyway, and believe it or not, my previous experience with lying seemed to aid me a little bit in my job. And I really took off in this job. And I remember, by this point, though, I'm still telling myself these lies and believing them, but I'm drinking against my own will. I was getting drunk accidentally a lot. When I said I'm not going to drink, I was not showing up on Mondays. My first month, the manager liked me. He took a liking to me. He says, kid, I'm going to make you salesman of the month. And there were like 18 salesmen. They were all sharks. I'm going to take this jacket off. I hope you don't mind. But and he said, they're all sharks here. And he goes, but I'm going to make them all hate you. So good. I already feel like they do. You don't understand. So hard to believe, but I took to the profession. At the end of the month, we had a sales meeting, and they would hand out our checks, our commission checks, and there were 18 of us in that room, and the manager's handing out the checks, and he said, he called me up, gives me my commission check, $7,500. Now, back in 85, that's a lot of money for a guy who's never worked a legitimate job in his life. So I get a check for $7,500 my first month. Then he calls me up after, and salesman of the month, and he hit every bonus, and he calls me up again, and he gives me a bonus check for $4,500. For those people that are under a year, I'll do the math for you. 12 grand. Okay? 12 grand. Keep coming back. You'll figure it out. $12,000. Okay? I got $12,000 my first month on a job. Guess what I do? There's a story in the book. I said, I'm going to go show a car. I'll be back right after lunch. 16 days later. Now, here's the insanity. Wait a minute. The insanity is not that I disappeared for 16 days. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a real alcoholic. The insanity is that on day 16, I put a shirt and tie on and showed up for work. Like nothing had happened, with a story. I don't even want to tell you the story. I cringe when I think of some of the lies I told. But they have to be preposterous or nobody will believe them. You're like, they have to, because you got to defy somebody to go, you are a liar. You got to absolutely test. Go ahead, call me a liar. I dare you. You tell them, I'll lie about that, And they yelled at me for a little bit and they put me back to work. And I said, I love this job. Now, let me tell you something. You can keep your alcoholism. You can keep the wolves away from the door if you're making a little bit of money, if the balance is in your favor. I was making enough money now to party and to keep my alcoholism down here for a little while. But sooner or later, it's going to eat everything you got. Those wolves are going to get through the door. If you throw enough money, things, jobs... My son was being born. This was a big deal in my life. I remember I got a little money together and I would try and keep my drinking it because now I had the excitement of this new job and I was successful at it, making more money than I ever thought. Well, I bought a little house, I got a car, and here's what happened. My son's born. And I remember going to the hospital that day. And I remember holding my son, and it's like somebody switched a light in my life. Something happened. It was like a light switch. Your life is not the same. There was an entire psychic change that day. I fell madly in love with that little boy. I'd never been in love with another human being in my life like that. And if you have a child, you may understand that. There's something happens. I knew that there was another human being alive that I would jump in front of a bus for. And I'm a coward. But I knew, now, I knew I was madly in love with this little boy, and I made him all the promises that we make. I'm going to be your dad. I'm going to be the greatest guy in your life. I'm going to coach you in Little League. I'm going to be there for you. We're going to walk. We're going to be able to, every time we see each other, hug each other, tell each other we love each other. I'm going to let you know you are loved for the rest of your life. And I meant it. And I cried with that little baby, and I set him down, and I walked into the waiting room, and there were some friends of mine there, and they said, let's go have a drink. Celebrate. 8 days later, I showed up home. I didn't want to do that. But once I drink, I can't control the amount I drink. There was a girl in detox that my wife used to sponsor, and she said, well, she had 30 days sober, and I heard this come out of her mouth. One of the most profound things I'd ever heard. And this was only a few months ago. She said, you can pretend, if you're an alcoholic, you can pretend to be a mother, a father, a friend, an employee, an employer, a child. You can pretend to be all those things. But you can't be any of those things. Because if you're an alcoholic, you can only be an alcoholic. And you know what? That's what I was. I was an alcoholic. I was just pretending to be all those other things. Now, I loved that child, but there was nothing stronger in my life. And I still didn't know it yet. I still did not know that this had me. It was still going to be different. I still was listening to the narrator. Today is going to be different. Tomorrow I'm going to, that's it. I mean it. I'm going to not do it anymore. And I was doing that crazy dance over and over again every day. Well, what happened was as things started, the alcoholism started to take over. And in the next few years, I just went down the tubes. I ended up losing that house, losing the car, taking that little boy and his mother and sneaking out of the house in the middle of the night and went back to Fort Lauderdale in some Skid Row motel. But there was a guy who had been one of my managers who didn't know me. And he offered me a job. He did not know what had become of me. He knew me when I was still riding high in car sales. So he offered me a job. He said, come on in. Gave me a brand new car to drive. And he gave me a sign-on bonus for $5,000. When can you start? I'll be here tomorrow. I'm not going to screw up this time. I was calling in sick to a job I'd never been on for 7 days. Is that insanity? But it seemed logical to me. And they had to come and tow their car away from that motel because I wouldn't open the door. You know, at this point of your drinking, we don't answer phones and we don't open doors. There's tape on the peephole. You know that because no light will escape. I was a black hole. No light could escape from my world. I had my world had shrunk up to be about this big. It was full of fear and remorse and guilt and shame. But I'm about to tell you the worst thing that ever happened to me. My girlfriend got pregnant again. And at this time I said, I am not going to bring another child into this world. My son wasn't quite 2 years old. And we're living in a Skid Row motel room and there's no food. And he's walking around in filthy diapers with watered down milk. Because I would say I'm going to buy groceries. But if you gave me money, the money went for me. I should be arrested. I should be in prison. They arrest people for doing what I did. She got pregnant and I said, we're going to give that child up for adoption. And it was a little girl. She was born September 5th, 1990. I never saw her. I have since done some things. If you want to know what I've done about it in my ninth step, I'll be glad to tell you afterwards. And I still pray for her. Almost on a daily basis. I've never seen her. Don't know her. She turned 19 this year. But I pray for her happiness, and I think she is. I know she is with a family that is a good family. I have seen pictures of her, but it's not my place to contact her. It's her place if she ever wants to, and I've made it known. Anyway, she went to the hospital on September 5th. Came back without a child. I never saw that little girl. I went on a binge to end all binges. And here's what I can tell you. My sobriety date is September 12th, 1990. I don't really remember a lot about September 12th. But I remember a heck of a lot about September 11th. It was the lowest day of my life. On that day, I had what I call my reverse spiritual awakening. I woke up that morning. Well, I don't think I went to bed. I've been binging since that child was born. And I remember having a vision. See, Bill talks about it in his story. And here's what I did not surrender to get well on September 11th. That's it. I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd never met anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know Alcoholics Anonymous existed. I didn't know anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know anybody who'd been to treatment. I mentioned the word Alcoholics Anonymous one time in my entire life when my girlfriend in that motel room, when I was choking her because she drank my last beer, threatened to call the police, and I said, I'll go to AA, and I don't even know where it came from. It just came out of my mind. It was one of those lies. You put enough pressure on me, a lie spot that pops out. You know, and it just popped out, and then luckily that passed, because I wouldn't have known where to go. And that was the only time I ever mentioned Alcoholics Anonymous. So I did not wake up. My story might be different than yours. I did not wake up and say, that's it, I'm done, and I'm not drinking anymore. What happened to me that morning is I woke up, or that day, in the middle of a binge. I was drinking and couldn't get drunk anymore. And I couldn't get high anymore. And I had a vision of what my life looked like through your eyes. For the first time in my life, I saw me for what I had become through your eyes, not through mine. Not with our ancient enemy, the book talks about rationalization and justification. And I saw my life for what it had become. I saw my life for the criminal, for the derelict, for the absolute alcoholic that I had become. And I said to myself, so this is how I die. So this is how it ends. So I'm going to die in the gutter or in jail. And I finally, and then I had an epiphany. I said, you know what? It's not the alcohol and drugs that's killing me. It's waking up every morning with that terrible shame, guilt, humiliation, that suffering, and going, today it's going to be different. First time in my life, I said, today, I couldn't believe my own lies one more day. I said, it's not going to be different. This is who I am. Quit pretending. If this is who you are, I'm going to drink till I die. I am not even going to wake up and tell myself that lie one more time. And I surrendered to die an alcoholic and a drug addict that day. Now, does that sound like the last day you drank and drug? Doesn't to me. But that's what happened that day. When you look in Bill's story, here's what Bill says. They told him he would either have to, he would be go to the Undertaker or the asylum. And he said, I knew it and welcomed it. And I did too. That's what I told you when I was cracking my eyelids open and I was mad I wasn't dead. And he said, so this is how it ends. I was to plunge into the dark, joining the endless procession of sots that had gone on before me. And I realized that's exactly what happened to me. I read that in his story. When I got sober, I said, that's what happened to me. I didn't want to get sober. I wanted to die. I wanted this to stop. I didn't want to sober up one more time. Please do not let me sober up one more time. I will do whatever it takes to stay high or drunk. And the problem is you can't. Your body won't even let you. You got to sober up. Well, here's what happened on September 12th. On September 11th, late that night, there was a knock on the door. Now, I told you, we don't open doors. Publisher's Clearinghouse is not out there with a check, okay? It's no good news on the other side of that door. But I opened the door that night. Because I think first time in my life, the fear, I didn't care anymore. I didn't care. And my brother walked in, who I hadn't seen in a couple years because I owed him a lot of money. My motto back then was, if I know you, I owe you. So he walked in, and he took one look at the filth, the squalor, took one look at my little boy, and he said, you need help. And there was something that went off in my head. And I said, you mean there's a way? I heard a voice. The narrator said, there's a way out of this? And he said, here's my phone number. Call me if you want. I'll watch your son while you get help. And that was the last time I ever took a drink or a drug to this day. I don't know why, and I don't know how. Well, I do. But it wasn't me. You know, my parents call me every year on my anniversary, and they go, God, we're so proud of you. You really pulled yourself together. I'm going, I didn't do anything. I was like one of these mutts that was in the street that some big hand came down and pulled him out of harm's way. And that's really been my recovery. That's my story. I wish I could tell you I had something to do with it, but I didn't. I've tried everything to sabotage it, but once you're on this side of the fence, you're in these rooms, man, the door's open for you if you want them to. All it takes is some willingness to walk through them. Well, and I think what happened to me that night was honest step one, is that I knew I was done. I was not going to sober up. My life was unmanageable. I was powerless over alcohol. That's it. I'm done. So what happened was is I didn't know about AA, but I had heard about treatment centers. So I said, I'm going to go to treatment. They're going to treat me. I don't know what they do there. They give you a pill. They make you read something. I'm going to go get well. Go to a treatment center. So I went to my brother came, picked us up, took us in, and my parents came, and they watched my son and helped set up my girlfriend in a little apartment while I went to treatment. Now I'm looking for a treatment center with the Olympic pool, the weight rooms, you know. All I need is 28 days. I heard they were 28 days. I need 28 days, get back on my feet. I'll be fine, right? They don't put guys like me in those treatment centers. You go to places for indigents. And they finally found one. It was an old apartment house. The United Way had converted into a treatment center. And they dropped me off at this place, and it was in Miami. And I went to this treatment center, and it was 6 months, a six-month treatment center. You don't understand. I can't tell you. The guy's interviewing me. I can't stay here 6 months. I have a little boy. See, now I'm a dad. I have a son. I got to get out there and take care of that boy. You know, we get well real quick. First thing we get back, 2 days sober. First thing that we get back is our judgment. We think it's sound. That's the first thing I got back. Oh, you don't understand. And I'm secretly, and he says, no, this is 6 months. All right, I'll tell him what he wants to hear, but I'm out of here in 28 days. I know this is for those real sick people. I ended up staying in that treatment center. I got out of that treatment center. And now, I've told you now what happened and what Joe did to his life. I'm going to tell you what God did to my life when I came into this program. I get out of this treatment center and I got nowhere to go. So I went where every good alcoholic goes who's 40 years old and got no money and nowhere to go. Mom, I'm home. Now, my mother had bought a little place in a manufactured home community in, of all places, Lady Lake, Florida. Anybody ever heard of that? It's over there by the villages, you know, it's over there like in the middle of the state. It used to be like the center of the Ku Klux Klan in the state of Florida back then, you know. And it was a retirement community. It was like the elephant burial ground. Everybody was 1,000 years old. And they set up my girlfriend in a little apartment. So I come home, but I didn't want to go back with her because she was still using. So I move in with Mom, and I'm sitting there on my first night back. Now, you see, I always thought the problem with us alcoholics is we don't like to get... You can't pay us in advance. Do not pay me in advance. I will not finish the job. And that's what AA is like. You don't get to know. See, that's what really kills us, is that we need to know how it's going to work out. You don't. The only way you get to know in here is through the AA rearview mirror. You get to look back in the AA rearview mirror. If you stay sober, all of a sudden you look back and go, wow, haven't had a drink in a year. Wow, got my license back and insurance and a license plate all at the same time. Holy cow, got a job. You know, I'm showing up for work. Got my first paid vacation. All these little things, these milestones started happening in my life. So what happened was is I'm living with Mom and I'm sitting out on the front porch the first night I'm there. And this guy comes over and see you, Paul. Well, this is the good part. Wait, no, just kidding. So this guy comes over, he's watering his lawn. This old man comes over from next door, he's watering his lawn. My wife reminds me that at the time, I call him an old man because he was at that time. And it's now she reminds me he was my age when I met him. Okay. So he comes over and he says, hey, I hear you had some problem with alcohol. Yeah, I did. He said, do you want to go to an AA meeting? He proceeded. I said, sure. He came to pick me up. He says, I'll pick you up a quarter after 7. And I was fresh out of this treatment center, 6 months in this treatment center. And quarter after 7, I look outside and there's his little car outside. He's idling. He never beeped the horn. I'm going to tell you this story. Some of you may not grasp it, so I'm going to give you the answers at the end. This is an open book test, because I didn't grasp it. And so he's standing outside, sitting outside in his car, nice and waiting patiently. I go out, jump in the car, smoke his cigarettes, burn up his gas. We go to a meeting, right? Come back from that meeting, and the next day I'm having dinner. And I look out the window, and there's that little old man sitting out there with his car idling. And he never beeped the horn, never came to the door. And I'm like, I missed the part where it said we were going steady. I said, I'll outwait this guy. I'm eating. I'm not going. Now I'm starting to get uncomfortable. Sooner or later, I give in, and I walk out to the car. And he's sitting there just quietly waiting for me. Now, I didn't know. They used to talk about this in meetings when I first got here. I don't hear it mentioned very much anymore. But they used to say it at almost all the meetings. I didn't know what that was. You know what that's called? Unconditional love. That's what it's called. The kindness of strangers. This program is given to you by a stranger that will save your life, that will love you regardless of who you are. Matter of fact, the worse you are, the more we like you. They may even ask you to speak if you're really bad. And he proceeded to take me to meetings every day for 6 months. I never missed a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous till I got my own car. That's right, you laugh because you guys just got your own car. We know that. So I had to get a job. Listen to this. You think that this is crazy. I go get a job. The next day there's a car dealership in town. I show up at this car dealership and they're waiting for an interview with the general manager. I go and finally I get into the general manager. I walk into his office. I'm stunned. Who do you think it is? It's the guy who handed me the $12,000 in West Palm Beach 5 years earlier. He's the guy. And I'm asking him for... I said, listen, I just got out of treatment. I go to meetings. I need a job. I got child support. I got these few felonies I need to take care of. You know, I haven't paid income tax in 20 years. It's just a couple minor little things, but I need this job. He gives me a job. And he says, okay, you can start tomorrow and go over here to this other little dealership we got next door, and you can start over there. But you don't think the hand of God was involved in my life. And he knew what I was like, and he allowed me to go to meetings. I would cut out of there, go to a noon meeting. I'd get out of there, go to 5:30 meetings, come back to work. Saved my life. My life was planned around my recovery at that time, not the other way around. Not my recovery planned around my life. If there's anybody in here doing that, that's what ended up happening to me. You'll get bored with recovery real soon because your life will start to be more important. So what happened was is, the guy who was the manager of this little dealership, listen to this. He's a guy that used to party with in West Palm. Now, he's not as bad as I am, but he's wild. He's drinking and snorting every night and going out. Now, I don't know this, so he's got a... One night, we go out on his jet ski one day at the beach, and that's fun. And then the next day, we're starting to pal around, and he invites me out. And he's going to Orlando for the night, and he wants me to come with him just to listen to the music. Right? Or just to play pool. So I'm going to go with him. And I'm still early in recovery. And I get to Orlando with him, and about halfway through the night, he's tanked. He's absolutely out of his gourd. And I need to go home. I'm starting to get scared. First of all, that's God working in your life. Because why an alcoholic doesn't pick up a drink, it's beyond me. That was just a gift. And I'm 50 miles away from home. We end up having a big fight. I end up taking a taxi all the way back home. Now, the next day, he's embarrassed. He sobers up. You know how we are. We sober up. Oh, what did I do last night? And then he knows we fought. Of course, alcoholics, it's always got to be their fault. It's never ours, right? So I'm the party pooper. So I get to work that day, and he calls me in his office. He says, have a seat. I sit down. He says, tell me the truth. He says, I know you go to those AA meetings, right? Yes, I do. He said, tell me the truth. Do you talk about me there? Now, I didn't at the time, I do now. But so, I know I'm screwed. The job is not, I'm not long for this job, man. This guy does not want me around, right? I go back to the room, I call Frank, my sponsor. Frank, you won't believe it. The guy, I tell him what happened. I says, I need this job, Frank. I gotta have this job. And Frank starts laughing. At this time, he's starting to take me through the steps, and he's explaining some things to me about the steps. He says, listen, let me put the steps real simply for you, because you'll complicate them. He said, step one is, you're screwed. That's it. If you don't go any further than step one, that's what you got. You're screwed. Sooner or later, you will drink and you will use again. And I knew he was right. See, I had taken step one in my heart, and I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that sooner or later, I can tell you I'm going to stay sober and I can mean it, but I'm going to screw up. I always do. I know my history. Sooner or later, I will use again. And then he told me step two. Step two is, it's going to take a friggin' miracle. And I went, well, that doesn't sound so good. He goes, it's the only shot you got. It is. Because you got to give up running your life. You got to give it up because you've done a terrible job and it's not getting better. It's going to get worse. He said, you better pray for a miracle. So this was one of those opportunities. Frank goes, this is great. This is an opportunity. I want you to pray about it and let me know how God works this out. That's Frank's favorite statement. Pray about it. Let me know how God works this out. He's so lucky I was desperate because I couldn't come up with any other ideas or alternatives. I did pray about it. So I show up for work the next day. True story. I come in and Tony's nowhere to be found. Where's Tony? Oh, you didn't hear? He got shot 8 times last night trying to buy some crack. And I went, oh my... They said, don't worry, it was a small caliber gun. He wasn't hurt bad. But he was shot 8 times. He was released from the hospital the same day. He crashed a company car. He's gone. He never saw Tony again. Ever. He disappeared off the face of the earth. So I run back to the office and call Frank. I said, Frank, you won't believe it. God shot the guy 8 times. And he did. And I'll tell you what. And that's what kept me in this program. I became willing because, and it's not because I thought Frank was a genius. Frank was a retired postmaster from St. Petersburg, Florida. He was a postman his whole life. What's this guy know? I owned a bar on South Beach. What does this guy know? But you know what? I became willing to take Frank's advice over mine, even when I thought I was right. And that's the only thing kept me in this program. Now I'm going to give you the quick version. I'm going to wrap it up because I ended up meeting my lovely wife. She was working at Intergroup with Frank. Frank volunteered at Intergroup. She worked at Intergroup. And he kept talking about this girl. So I kind of finagled my way in one day. Played stupid. Oh, is Frank here? You know. One of those, yeah, right. And we end up falling in love, and you know, and now at this point, it's about a year later. I have custody of my son. My son's mother went out, and we kind of lost track of her. And I've got my little boy, and we start dating, and she's got 2 kids, and we end up getting married. And this is where I start slipping things in. To my recovery. I did the steps with Frank and I went through 4 and 5 and it was wonderful. I told about that thing that I would never tell anybody about. I got rid of that thing. I got free. Things started happening in my life faster than I could imagine. I was getting promoted. I was making more money again. It was incredible. I met the most beautiful woman. I never thought I would have that kind of relationship again. And we lived in a beautiful house. It was hers, of course. And I didn't have anything. So... life was good. I thought it was all the promises coming true, right? Well, I get offered this big job in West Palm Beach to be a general manager of this big luxury car dealership. And I go to West Palm Beach. I said, we're going to West Palm Beach. This is an opportunity. This is the one of the promises coming true in my life. We moved to West Palm Beach. You laugh because you know. We never place material well-being ahead of spiritual well-being. It just don't work. I'm here to tell you. I said, this is an opportunity. And I knew that this was self-will run. I didn't know it was self-will run riot. But this should have been the giveaway when I told her. I said, I'm going with or without you. That should be a giveaway. You kind of got a little self-will going on. Well, I ended up coercing them to go with me. And we moved to West Palm. And I'm making more money ever dreamed about. I'm 5 years sober. We buy a big, beautiful house in a beautiful area of West Palm Beach. I'm driving beautiful cars. $1,000 suits, and I am not going to AA. I don't have time. I'm working a lot of hours. I'm going to catch up on it, I swear. My sponsor's calling me, and I'm doing this. This is the program of recovery I'm working. My sponsor would call, my secretary would go, it's Frank on the phone. Tell him I'm not here. And that's the program of recovery. To go to a meeting, I would have to check a schedule. That's my program of recovery. Oh, I think I'll go to a meeting. Let me look where there is one. I don't have a home group. I don't have anybody that I'm accountable to. But I'm very successful in the business. And we're beyond my dreams. But I'm becoming more and more. You know what our book says? It says, the alcoholic insanity returns and then we drink again. So drinking is not my problem. It's never been my problem. Drinking is my solution to feel good about who I am. Because no matter what I did, it was never enough. I was always $10 short. What happened was, is my wife eventually could not stand the insanity anymore. We were arguing and fighting, and it was getting worse and worse. My kids didn't even like me. My son didn't like me. Her kids didn't like me, and I didn't blame them. And eventually, she divorced me, threw me out of the big house. And I end up out on the street with my little boy. Now I'm so enraged and so angry. We take that little boy I don't know what I'm so mad that it eventually bleeds over into my job, and within about 2 months they fire me from my job. So now I'm out of work, and I start the cycle. I'm borrowing money, I'm applying for credit cards to pay off credit cards. I'm getting deeper in debt. I'm so angry. I can't sleep. I can't eat. And I don't have a program of recovery. But I'll tell you what I did have. I had a bar that I used to pass on the way home. And it was a bar I was really attracted to. It had a name I really liked. It said in lights, Bar. You know the kind of place. I could be a big shot in that place. And the parking lot was in the back. You know the kind of place, man. I'd go there and hang out forever. And I would drive by this place like a buzzard circles roadkill for about 2 weeks. I'm driving by it. This is how powerful God is. Finally, I leave my little boy asleep in that room one day. I can't take it. I curse God. I said, this is recovery. You can have it. I don't want it. I don't want you. I don't care anymore. We don't care. That's dangerous. I jump in my car and I am going to drink. Those other nights, I would try and talk myself into it. But it's hard to drink when you got 5.5 years sober when you know it's going to kill you. Because the only step I've ever done 100% was step one. I know, see, you don't understand. If I take a drink, my lifestyle changes. I'm not going back to the piano bar flirting with girls. I'm going back to the skid row if I live. Or jail. There's no more good times in my drinking. And I know it. I can't buy into my own lies anymore. And I'm driving to this bar that night and I don't care. I'm so enraged I cannot take it one more day. At a traffic light right down across from the bar, and I can see the bar, and I got the butterflies going in my stomach, and I'm nervous because I know I am about to cross the threshold. I'm about to fall off the cliff. If you're an alcoholic of my type, we get close, we fall off every time. And I know I'm about to do this. And I look over, the light's red, and there's a broken down van with this hood up, and the front license plate says, "Have you prayed today?" And I'll tell you what happened. I said the serenity prayer. And I ended up at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that night. I'd been to one time before, a year ago. And I walk in the back of the room and there's a crowd like this. And I sit in the back and there's a guy at a podium and he says, tonight's anniversary night. There's about 6 or 8 people celebrating anniversaries. Is anyone else here having an anniversary in the month of September? And like an idiot, I raised my hand. I am. It was my 6-year anniversary. And everybody clapped. And here's what he said. Here's what we do here. We all come up and share a little bit about how we stayed sober, about 10 minutes. And he said, since you're our visitor, why don't you start us off? That's right. I'm walking up going, oh my God. And I got up to the front of the room and I turned around and I looked at the people out there, just like I look at you guys. And all I could do was cry. I started to sob. I said, I need help. I don't know how to do this thing. I'm lost. And there was a treatment center that used to bring all the people from treatment. They were all in the front row, so they didn't want. They go, "That's not how it is at 6 years." They carted me off the stage. So they dragged me off the stage. Yeah, that's right. And a couple guys take me in the back in the kitchen. And it's like the old joke. We're going to show you one more time. And here's what they did for me. They showed me the program of recovery. They showed me the parts that I'd left out. See, I can come here and take all I want, but until I learn to give, it ain't going to matter. Every one of you in this room could love me to death, but I'm not going to get sober until I learn to love you. Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to love you. Dr. Bob said, this program is boiled down to two words, love and service. I wasn't doing either one of them. I was coming and getting it and taking it home. That's why that part about the gaunt prospector, he's found a limitless load that will never run out as long as he gives it all away. I always thought, what a crazy thing. What's the point of finding it if you got to give it away? That's where the high is. They started taking me to jails, detoxes, treatment centers. They took me through the steps again. I did the steps, and they made me sponsor guys. My life changed. I started getting into the service of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my life absolutely changed. Something happened. I started making decisions. I got out of the car business, and I took a crummy job because I could be home with my son, and I could coach him in Little League. And him and I took a little apartment. I even canceled, listen to this, I canceled my cell phone. So I could just be present. And I took this crummy job and I threw myself into my recovery. It became the most important thing in my life. And it is my life. It's what I do for a living is my recovery. What I do for work is how I support my livelihood. That's not the most important thing. Even though it's a wonderful thing that I do and I'm one of the blessed people that love what they do today. My wife and I, she was going through the same thing. You see, she's also my second wife and my third wife. So we both know we need to be here on a beautiful Saturday afternoon, right? She started doing the same thing in her program, and about a year later we met up again and started dating. And we had both become different people. This program was number one in our life. We started to have a new relationship with God at the top of the relationship. We pray together every day. We pray for our marriage. You know our book says to do that? I never saw that in there. It says you invite your wife, your family, into your prayers every day. If he's at the center of your life, he's got to be at the center of your life. And then God saw fit to give a parent that should be locked up in jail two more children. And I got twin boys back there. Boys that I love, that I'm their Little League coach. I'm still doing it. I can't believe it. We drive down the street. I go, I'm just like a real dad, aren't I? And I am today. I'm just like a real dad. I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. That crummy job, let me tell you something. I am in way over my head. If there wasn't God, I got no reason to be here telling you guys. I'm not qualified to tell you guys anything. I'm only telling you what happened in my life. I'm not qualified to have the business and the life I have and the wife and the kids I have. My kid asked me one time, that crummy job, what happened was I started a business with that crummy job, and I sold that business for millions of dollars 7 years later, and then started another one and sold it for millions of dollars 2 years later. My son asked me one time, Dad, you're a real successful businessman. Where did you learn how to do that? I said, because I ran 35 businesses into the ground. I said, I don't know. How do I know? Because I don't run my business anymore. God runs my business. We run my business by the traditions and by the steps. And if you're ever at any of the sales meetings I hold, you'll hear that. You'll think you're at an AA meeting. I live by this program now. I love this program. It's in every facet of my life. We have an AA home. My wife sponsors girls. I sponsor guys. That's why he paid $5 to come in here, because I've stood him up the last 3 weeks in a row on his on his time to come over to the house. But I will close with this real quick. And I know I ran over, and I thank you for being patient. But I'm going to tell you about how spectacular this program is and what's going to happen if you stick around. All you got to do is not escape. And don't worry about what it feels like. This program is going to change your life. There was a bar in Miami that I loved. When I used to close down my disco, we'd go to it. It opened at 5 in the morning. Had no sign. It had a little doorbell. You ring it, they slide, like you see in the movies. They slide the door open, and if they recognized you, you got in. And you could bring people in with you. Now, there would be 500 people in this disco. No windows, nothing. You're in there 5 o'clock in the morning. The limousines are parked all out front. No sign. You got to know about it to know it's there. People would get killed in there. They would throw out the people that got killed. They would never throw out the guy who did the shooting. Just get the bodies out. And the police never came. It was the greatest place in the world. I loved it. I love this place. Now, here's why I really liked it. You'd go there in your disco clothes, right? Or your Don Johnson suit. And they would throw you out of there about 10, 11 o'clock on Sunday morning, you know. And, of course, the door would swing open. And you'd go, oh, my God, the sun is out. And you're on Miami Beach, and you're like, oh, my God. Because nobody brings sunglasses in when you come in, right? Here's why I loved it. They would give you a drink of whatever it is you drank. At that time, I drank scotch, full of scotch, to go. Plastic cup full. And they would give you cardboard sunglasses. I loved them. I said, God, you guys are great. And I'm walking out of this bar one morning. I got my cardboard sunglasses. They look like 3D glasses. I got my drink full of scotch, and I got a cigarette hanging from my mouth. And I get into my car, and I pull up to the light. And next to me at the light is a little family in a little car, and they're all clean. There's two little kids in the back, little girl with little bows in her hair, a little boy with a shirt and tie on, right? And the parents are all dressed up. Now, it's Sunday morning. You know where they're going, right? And I look over at them, and I think, what a bunch of losers. And I know they looked over at me, and I know the little boy said, Dad, look, it's the Antichrist. I'm sitting there with my glasses and my drink. And because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, despite me and because of you people and a loving God, I'm in that car today. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you very much.